You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 24th of July, 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, I am joined today by my co-host, who was the proprietor of the Aryan Spring 2 channel, but he's not anymore, and I'll let him talk to you about that. Subal, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks, mate. Yeah, I got shut down again. It was Devonshire Fascist. It used to be Aryan Spring. I changed the name, but anyway, whatever. I got shut down again. I made some videos. One of the videos was talking about white mafia, this white mafia meme, which I created in reaction to the white Sharia meme, which was just annoying everybody. So I made a meme called White Mafia. It was just a word, really. But anyway, I was talking about how I want the spoils of war and how, you know, once we kick the 250,000 Jews out of the country, there's going to be a lot of property lying around. And all I was saying was that I wanted some of that property. And Jez Turner has actually promised me a mansion in Devon. And I've got the email and I'm going to claim it at some point in the future. But I was just saying how greed is a great motivator, and I have more of a mercantile kind of approach to this whole thing. I know the last great Hitlerian revolution was more of a revolution about sacrifice, but my angle on this thing is that, you know, if you want to inspire people to fight, then you kind of have to dangle something in front of them. You have to offer them something. So I want the spoils of war. But YouTube did not like that video. So I got that one got taken down. And at the same time, I made a video criticizing a certain gay white nationalist. And I was just making the point that, you know, if you ask most white nationalists, they don't like homosexuals, but we do have homosexual white nationalists. So it kind of seems to me that they're kind of a protected minority within our group, if you see what I mean. And I was talking about that. I was talking about gay mafia. And, you know, lo and behold, the video got taken down straight away. Somebody flagged that one and took it down. So that was a double whammy. And then the channel was limping on for about a week. And then somebody took down another video and that's it. It's gone now. So second time I got wiped out. So I'll probably have to think of doing something else instead, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
Well, just let people know that not all of them, but the majority of your previous videos, we've got the audio of them all, and they're all at archive. If people check out the article that goes along with this podcast and they click your name, that will take them to all the previous audio that you've recorded. Not just the podcast that you do with me, but all the audio that you were recording for that channel. We've got
some of them
saved elsewhere.
Sorry, some of them are also on VidMe. I got a few on there, about 10 maybe. So
that's good. So all is not lost, and of course you'll still be doing this weekly podcast, so people can check that out. I think it's what you're saying is right there. We do have to have something to offer people, and I think your idea of saying, look, once we get the immigrants out, we'll have plenty of houses for our young, and the prices will go down, and so we can offer these positive things. And as far as what you're talking there about homosexual white nationalists, I mean, it's not just homosexual white nationalists. We've got non-white white nationalists. We've got white nationalists married to non-whites with non-white girlfriends. It's a terrible state of affairs, really, where white no longer means white and natural law is no longer being adhered to. I mean, if we're not going to stand for what's natural and what's right and purity of our race, then what is the point in any of it? What is the point in any of it if you just want to keep things the way they are. We want to preserve what we have that is pure, and we want to see a stop to all the perversity. We don't want to see children being abused, and that is the end result of homosexuality. That's the life cycle of the homosexual, is that he abuses a child, and the child then becomes a homosexual. That's part of it. That's why they've legalized homosexuality, because these paedophiles do it. Instead of hanging all the paedophiles, so we don't have any more, what they've done is legalize homosexuality. Now, I guess there are two ways of dealing with this. I mean, a homosexual is someone that sodomizes other men or boys, but somebody that's been abused, as you say, like these boys that have been abused, if they then turn their back on that and they say that they're not doing that anymore and they try and find themselves a girlfriend or they remain celibate, then, I think maybe that, we can't frown on that too much in the movement. But if you've got active homosexuals, then that needs to be stopped. So, we've got to have a bit of leeway there, I think. George Lincoln Rockwell did, didn't he? He had lots of success in turning these homosexuals straight.
I think. Yeah, I think we should definitely be forgiving. I mean, we've all done, stupid things in the past. Hopefully most of us haven't done anything that stupid. But, yeah, of course, we have to. And this is the thing. I mean, I made a whole video about it. I mean, being gay is a choice. Being gay is a choice. It's not like, being a half caste, you get born half caste, you don't really have any choice in the matter, but you are choosing to engage in sexual relationships, with another man if you're a man. It's a conscious choice. So it's this idea that, I was born gay, or I have these feelings, or whatever. Well, okay, maybe you have the feelings, but just don't act on them. I mean, we all have bad feelings, don't we? I mean, some people want to murder people, some people want to steal, some people, I mean, even if you're straight, you might be lusting after, for example, another man's wife. This happens quite often, or another man's girlfriend. You might get a little bit too close to her, and you might thinking about, stealing a woman from another man. It's also a very low-class thing to do. So we all have our temptations, and the point is that we are supposed to control them. And not only control them, but we should condemn those that are unable to control them. That's the foundation of civilization, isn't it, really? Otherwise, we're all just a bunch of animals. And it's just unfortunate. It does seem to be, especially within the alt-right, there does seem to be a tolerance of homosexuals, primarily because Richard Spencer appears to say it's not a problem. The Daily Stormer, they talk about throwing them in the bog. TRS, they appear to be generally quite hard on them. But although they talk about the act itself in a general way being bad, they won't denounce or disavow white nationalists who actually are gay by name. But anyway, whatever. It's, I don't want to make too much of a big deal in it. I mean, there are a lot of people who are trying to attack the alt-right. I mean, I think it's doing a great job. It's probably the most successful white nationalist movement in the last God knows how many decades. And it's definitely pushing the Overton window in the direction that we want it to be pushed. It's just my hope that at some point in the future, we can turn it into an anti-gay movement and, take it to the next level. So, yeah.
Well, nationalism has to be about natural law, and that goes right against natural law, and it goes against the principle of self-control. That's what it's about, is self-control, not giving in to these urges. When I was at school, growing through adolescence, we were taught that as you go through puberty, you might get crushes. You might get crushes on teachers. You might get crushes on older people, or you might get crushes on your own sex. You might get crushes on your own kind. Not to worry about that. It will just pass after a few months. Just don't act on it. And that's what we were taught at school, because you've got all these hormones going and your body doesn't really know how to respond to them. And you might think that you find another bloke attractive or something, but just don't act on it. That's what we were taught. And there was no problem with it at our school. And nowadays they won't teach people that, and they'll tell people, oh, well, you must be homosexual if you have a crush on an older boy or something like that. You must be homosexual. And this is the difference. I mean, we used to be taught that the people did have these feelings. They could have these feelings, but that's fine. It's just a feeling in your head, so long as you don't act on it. And that's the big difference with today, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I know I've met two homosexual men. Or is it three? Oh, I know, whatever. Two that I remember at the moment, but who they're gay, but they never actually had sex with a woman. Their first sexual experience was with another man. And I don't think they were abused. And I think what happens is that, you know, when you're young, obviously you're really, really horny. And, you know, we live in this such a degenerate society, and there's just so much pressure on young teenagers to lose their virginity and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's an incredible amount of pressure. And, I think what happens is they go for the easy option sometimes. You know, they just think, oh, well, I'll do it with another man instead. Or I'm that way inclined, they start to think, because it just builds up, and it just goes in the wrong direction. And it's very unfortunate. I mean, actually, we're going to talk about this today. I've got just in the Daily Mail today, what's her name? Our Education Secretary, Justine Greening, who is a lesbian, right? Great, isn't it? Great news. She's talking about, basically, she's the education minister. She's teachers told to target homophobic school bullies as education minister champions gender change revolution. Wow, that's great, isn't it? And I just got a quote here. A key plan will be making it less stressful for people who want to change gender. Currently, if a person wishes to change gender, they have to go to a doctor for a diagnosis of gender dysphoria or dysphoria. I'm trying to say that word. The term for believing you were born in the wrong body and prove they have been in transition for at least 2 years. So that's the current situation, but they want to make it easier. So basically, no need for a doctor. I mean, I'm not in favor of getting your organs cut off in the first place, but they want to streamline the process. You know, they want to make it even easier for confused young boys to cut their genitals off. It's pretty, it's very progressive. There you go.
Well, we've gone from telling them not to act on things because in 6 months' time their feelings would have changed to being something completely different, to telling them that we're going to make it easier for you to mutilate your body, something that can never be reversed, that you're going to have to live with for the rest of your life. Yeah. It's completely insane what they're doing with this transgender promotion, and the older young people are really confused about it. I mean, the actual figures for the people that are going through this have gone through the roof since they started promoting it. And a lot of these people are really going to be regretting this in time to come. I mean, it's basically, you're just going to have a wound there. Instead of having what God gave you, you're just going to have an open wound, which perverts like to masturbate into for the rest of your life. I mean, it's got to be the sickest thing of our times that I see around us today. I think, I mean, Grandpa Lampshade did a wonderful post on the actual mechanics of all of this. And once they have this wound, they have to dilate it. They have to put objects inside it, larger and larger ones, all the time. And of course, it's bleeding, and it is literally a wound. It's absolutely vile. And then these people think that they're women. They think that they're women. Then,
And
just because they've taken some hormones and sliced their bits off, they're not women. They're men. I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about the other day to do with this. It's really strange the way that the medical industry and science, they try to tell us that there's no God, there's no such thing as the soul, there's no spirit. It's all just what you can see. It's the body and that's it. And yet they believe in that people are born into the wrong body. They believe that they're a different gender. Never mind the fact that they can look at their brains, they can look at their bodies, everything about them is one gender. Yet some part of them that we can't see, they admit, is something completely different. It just seems strange to me. It just seems like a contradiction that they believe that on the one hand, and will chop people's bodies up to go along with what they think. And then on the other hand, they'll ridicule people with any faith, or ridicule people with belief in God, or saying that there's any spiritual component to all of this. It's a contradiction, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. The tabula rasa, the blank slate, is really the foundation of libertarianism, and it, as it was pushed forward by John Locke in the 17th century, I think. John Locke, of course, is the father of the libertarian movement, or the father of modern democracy, I suppose you could say. And it's the foundation. It's the foundation stone for democracy. It's this idea that you can become whatever you want to become. It's the idea that empirical evidence is superior to any kind of revelation or anything that you're born with. And it really forms the foundation stone for Marxism, which wants to rise the working classes up and raise the lower races up, to make everybody equal and everybody the same. And then along they come, and they just spit in the face of their own philosophy, and they say there's no such thing as a tabula rasa, and some people are born gay, and some people are born, you know, female in a male body, or some people are born as dolphins, or whatever the hell. And it's supreme hypocrisy and intellectual dishonesty. But that really is the left wing all over. The left wing, it doesn't have any intellectual credibility. Its arguments make no sense. It's a formless mass of different positions. I mean, this is one thing which I always used to, which I had to learn to come to terms with early on when I was, studying Vedic philosophy, because we're talking a lot about Buddhism and, trying to compare the different religions. Buddhists, obviously, they believe everything is nothing, and it's a philosophy that doesn't make sense, And I remember discussing it many times with my friends, and we're trying to understand Buddhism, right? We're trying to get our heads around it, to get a grip on it. Like, so some people say everything's a dream. Some people say many, many different varieties of this Vedic philosophy. And the conclusion that we reached was that there is only one truth, and that is the absolute truth. And everything apart from that is just a mistake. It's irrational. It doesn't make sense. It's nonsensical. It's madness. And that's really what the left wing is, in my opinion. As I've said many times before, the left wing is really a revolution against the right, a revolution against God, a revolution against common sense, a revolution against reality. There is only one reality. It's not that we have two alternative forms of society, a right-wing society and a left-wing society. No, it doesn't work like that. There's only one correct form of civilization, and that is the right civilization, the right-wing civilization, where everything is balanced out. The left is just a reaction and a rebellion. So, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. On the one hand, their foundation is the tabula rasa, and then on the other hand, they say that people are born gay. It's just retarded.
Doesn't stand up to scrutiny. What you're saying there with the right civilization, it has to be hierarchical. It has to be based on the biological reality that we see. I mean, you can say that there's a certain amount of variability in people, but essentially, whatever race you are will determine a lot about the sort of person that you are. And also your breeding. Musician families breed musicians.
Yeah.
Lawyer families breed lawyers. Doctor families breed doctors. And it gets passed down. And essentially, it's the type of person they are biologically. You can't just look at somebody and say, they're a complete blank. And that's the way that society has to be structured around. It has to be structured around the reality that we see. Form and function are intimately intertwined, especially as in nature. Particularly in nature, form and function go together. So when you see something that has a completely different form to you, like a Negro, he obviously has a completely different function to you. There's yep. nothing in nature that is superfluous. It all has a reason for being there. Now, one of the great things that I can remember reading about in these 19th century books from America from these slave owners, they were saying, well, if you look at the Negro, if you look at his face, he can't actually show any emotion. He can't blush. He can't go dark. He can't go black like a storm cloud. He's got no emotion. You can't see that on his face. No. You can't see when he's ashamed like you can with a white man. And because you can't see it, he can't feel it. If he could feel it, nature would have given us some way so that we could see it. You can see the emotions on a white man's face. You can see how he is feeling. But you can't with a Negro. I mean, you look at these Negro actors. They just have two faces, happy and sad. And that relies upon the way that their mouth looks.
Gormless.
Yeah, gormless. Sure, yeah, that's the main one. But, you have to look at the form of something to determine its function.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely very tough. I mean, I give that to them. I mean, you can go on the YouTube and watch various videos of black people getting fights, and they are not bothered by extreme levels of violence. It doesn't affect them because they're kind of like blunt instruments. They just don't. Yeah, there was that one incident. I think it was like a Chinese police officer in America. He shot the black guy, and the girls, the black woman, she was filming it, and she was like, oh my god, she wasn't really upset, it didn't really faze her. She was just, they're biologically adapted to be very unsympathetic, very lacking in compassion, and they're very good at violence basically, and good at sex, I suppose. I mean, that's what they're good at, and they're just, yeah, I mean, they're better off just left in the jungle. I mean, the worst thing you want to do is just start breeding millions and millions and millions of them and then importing them into your country and then breeding more and more of them. You know, their natural, with the kind of mentality that they have, they're naturally inclined just to live in tribal units and just to kill each other and live, a bear lifestyle off the jungle. And that's it. And we've taken this type of human, put him on welfare, and given him guns and stuff, and put him in movies and things like this. It's nuts. It doesn't make sense. It's just retarded. And it's not just a case of low IQ either, because there are other races who have a low IQ. The Filipinos, for example, who are extremely passive, and they make very good servants. I know. I've met a few Filipino. I was in Hong Kong for a while. Hong Kong is full of Filipino, servants. They're very good servants, very docile. And they've got a low IQ, obviously, but they don't have the same aggression. Africans, they've got low IQ and they're aggressive. It's just like the worst possible combination you could get, really. Bad news all round, really.
Well, that low IQ that's naturally what they're supposed to have. I mean, if you had a white man with an IQ of 75, he would be an imbecile. He would be a retard. And yet when you've got Negroes with an IQ of 75, they're perfectly capable. Because if you look at animals will have a lower IQ, but they're perfectly capable of doing whatever that animal is supposed to do. And the same as a Negro has a low IQ, and he's perfectly capable of doing what the Negro is supposed to do, but he's not capable of maintaining a civilization, which is what we expect him to be able to do as soon as he sets foot on the shores of Europe or America. This is the difference. And just to go back to what I was saying about this, the way that these inherited traits are passed down through the families, like musicians and lawyers and doctors. We had a big promotion last week of the fact that white people were all racist because they didn't want to date blacks. They had a television program called Is Love Racist on Channel 4, and nobody mentioned genetic similarity theory, the theory that you pick partners and friends that have a similar amount of genetic inheritance to you. And this is the reason why people pick the same partner that's capable, or doctors will pick a partner that will produce children that can be doctors, or a musician will pick a partner that will produce children that will be musicians. And they look similar to your grandparents or your great grandparents. This is why people say that your boys will pick a girlfriend that reminds them of their mother, and girls will pick a boyfriend that reminds them of their father, because it's built within us, inbuilt within our genes, to seek out people with the same genes that we have, even when they're not immediately observable ones, like the gene to be a musician, say. And nobody on this program pointed this out at all, that people just want to breed like with like. They were trying to say that white people were racist because of this, that only 10% of white people out of 5,000 polls said that they would date outside their race, which is good, which is natural, which is what you would expect. And then they said mixed race and East Asian are more likely to date outside their race. Well, that quite obviously, mixed race people are going to want to breed with whites so that they can lighten up their skin. And then it says 35% of white people say they would never date a black person. Well, that should be 100%.
Only 35%.
Yeah. And then they said only 10% of black people said they would never date a white person. So 90% of Negroes want to date a white woman or a white man. 90% of them. So what the producers of this television program were saying is that this is because white people are racist. This must be because white people are racist, because otherwise it should be 90% of white people that would want to date blacks. Well, no, what this shows is that white people are the most desirable. White people are the most beautiful race, and everyone wants to sleep with whites. 90% of Negroes want to sleep with white people. They had somebody on this program who said, well, I don't fancy him. His nostrils are flaring. They got attacked for this. All Negroes' nostrils are flaring. All Negroes have great big blubber lips. They all look as if they're frowning. That's just the natural look to them. And there is objective beauty, and there is nothing more beautiful than the white woman. And that's what they showed. But the TV presenters were convinced that, no, this was racism. This was white people being racist. This is why they didn't want to sleep with blacks. And yet the science is there to show that people sleep with people that are like them, that have a significant amount of the same inheritable genes. There's been a lot of work done on this, and yet they ignored all the science and just pushed this idea that whites are racist. But yeah, it was good that only 10% of white people said that they would date outside their race. But even 10% is not good enough. It needs to be 100% of whites won't date outside their race. When you think of the tragedy that the offspring have to endure, they will be like that forevermore. People will say, well, hang on a minute. What about the National Socialists? Didn't they allow people that were only a quarter mixed to then breed with whites, and then they could become white again? But back then, they didn't have DNA testing. Science has moved on since then. DNA testing proves that even if you have a little bit of mixing in you and it's 10 generations back, it's still there within you. It's still there within your blood. Otherwise, the DNA test wouldn't be able to tell you that 10 generations back, one of your ancestors was a Negro. So it doesn't matter how far back it was, doesn't matter how many white people a mixed person breeds with, their blood will always be adulterated. And yet we've got programs like this that was on Channel 4 trying to encourage people to do this to their children, to do this to their offspring. It's incredibly evil thing to do. I know back in the Vedas, in the Bhagavad Gita, says that the root of all evil comes from the mixing of the castes. And yet here today, we think it's the greatest good is to encourage the mixing of the castes, and not even just the castes, but the mixing of the races, because the castes are within your own race. Did you see any of this at all, Subal, when it was on the television?
Oh, no, I don't watch TV. No, sorry. No, I missed it. But yeah, it is interesting that you mentioned about the fact that you can measure beauty. And you can. I mean, I think it's called the golden radius, I think, off the top of my head.
Golden ratio.
Golden ratio. Yeah, there's an actual mathematical... Oh, yeah, I've got the book on my shelf. The golden ratio. Yeah, there's an actual mathematical way of measuring a person's face to see if they're beautiful or not. And the European people used to know this. I mean, the artists would know it. They use it to design, to paint pictures and to design buildings and to design everything. It would be something which you would automatically learn if you studied art, and it'd just be something that intelligent people would know about. And now it's just gone basically completely out of the window in favor of this abstract mishmash Jewish modern art, which is just ugly and deformed and against beauty, really. And this is really just one of the most horrible things, really, about this Jewish totalitarian state that we live in. It's a state which promotes ugliness, ugly music, ugly architecture, ugly art, and ultimately it churns out ugly people, because it refuses to accept standards of beauty. It says that beauty is objective. And now we've got this movement with, now we have to accept that, morbidly obese fat women are beautiful as well. And this can all be very confusing, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, before I got red pilled, I remember being confused about this, because I was in a very multicultural situation. And I remember looking at girls from different parts of the world and thinking, is she pretty or not? Is she pretty? And I'll try and say, because certainly, if a girl is young, then obviously she has a certain, sparkle, because youth is fertility, and fertility is beauty, right? Because they can have babies. That's what it's all about. But I remember being confused about it. It goes, this liberal, this Marxist, doctrine of ugliness, doctrine of, relative beauty. I mean, I personally felt really imbibed it. I mean, sometimes I'm looking at, because black girls or girls from South America or Indian girl, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, is she pretty? Isn't she pretty? And it's kind of like it puts a check on your natural instinct, because what happens is your mind and your body is divided, right? Because what your body says, no, right? She's flipping ugly, mate. Yeah. Give it up. But your mind, because your mind's full of all this multicultural crap, you're looking at her and you're trying to figure it out, and you become divorced from your mind, and your body become divorced, and you become confused. So I've experienced this myself, and I think it's something which probably afflicts a lot of men. That's why they end up marrying these, ugly Thai girls and ugly Vietnamese girls. It's flipping awful, really. I mean, it must be awful. You go to Thailand, you're surrounded by, Thai girls. And I suppose because I've been to Thailand myself, when you're there, it's because you're surrounded by them, you kind of it normalizes it in your brain a little bit, I suppose, right? So you go to Thailand, you meet some Thai girl, you think, oh, she's pretty, right? Because in your brain, somehow you're comparing her to all the other Thai girls, right? And then you bring her back to England or America. and then you end up, you look at your wife and you're like, oh my God, I married this ugly woman. Like, what the hell was I thinking? You know what I mean? So yeah, it's what the Jews have done is they've destroyed our instinct for beauty, which is probably one of the greatest and noblest characteristics that the white man has, and they've scrambled it with their Marxist ideology, and that's very, very sad. And that's why, unfortunately, you have to be cruel to be kind, and you have to point out that, sorry, but these black girls are ugly and Asian women they're just ugly. Just don't do it. They're ugly. Like, wake up, mate. It's like when you're going out with your mates and some, it's Friday night, you've had a few beers. Right, you see your mate chatting up some minger, and you're like, and he's like, oh yeah, because he's had too much to drink.
And it's got his beer goggles on.
Yeah, your beer goggles on, and it's like you've got to nudge him, mate. She's fucking, sorry, I shouldn't sweat. Mate, she's a minger, you know, like, pack it in. So, yeah, we kind of have to, we have to do that. Yeah, wake up.
Not even Negroes find Negroes attractive. I mean, this is the thing. I always used to think, well, blacks find blacks attractive. Chinese must find Chinese attractive. But these figures show that, no, that isn't the case. 90% of Negroes would sleep with a white woman. So they can't just find their own kind attractive. There is objective beauty, and it's down to proportion and symmetry. This golden ratio that you were talking about there. And this is one of the ways that you can tell when somebody is of mixed race. I mean, they might be fair skinned, but there'll be something about them that alerts you to the fact that they're not white. And it's nearly always proportion. And if you think about, if you think of blacks, they have very long legs and a very short chest, and they have long monkey-like fingers, long thin fingers. So when you see a white woman with these long legs and a short chest, you think, well, she's out of proportion. It's the same as if you see a white-looking woman with a thick-set neck and a big head and a huge butt sticking out, and you think, well, that's really odd. What an odd shape. What is it about them? And it's because they're a mulatto, because they've got the wrong skeleton for the skin color that they've got. Because you never get a smooth blend. You never get a smooth mix when you mix the two races together. It shatters the genome, and you end up with parts of one race and parts of the other race. So people end up looking out of proportion. And the white man is built to perfect proportions. But when you look at Negroes, even the purest of Negroes will very rarely have symmetry. If you look at what one eye will be higher than the other, one nostril will be slightly larger than the other, or the ears, one will be lower down and one will be higher up. It's very, very rare that you actually see any symmetry when you look at Negroes. It always seems to me as if they're sort of half finished, as if the potter was sort of half finished it and thought, no, I won't finish that, I'll just leave it. And then it got fired and in the kiln, and it was stuck that way. They always look like that to me. Yet when you look at a white man or a white woman, most of the time they have perfect proportions. And if they don't, then there's probably some inbreeding in there from a while back. That's the only thing that could cause it.
Yeah, I remember once I met a guy in Brazil, big guy, and he was looking at me. I was talking to him and blah, blah, blah. And he looks, he's white. Yeah, he's a white man. But he looks at me and he starts going, look at me, look at me. And I'm like, all right, mate, yeah. He's like, I'm black, he says. I'm like, and I'm looking at him, he's got like white skin, you know, and I'm like, mate, you're not black, you're white. No, he's like, look at me, I'm black. Look at the structure of my face and my nose and everything. And I'm like, okay. And anyway, basically he told me his father was black, right? So his father was black, but he got white skin, and he looked as white as I look. But his bone structure and the structure of his face, you know, it's like when you looked at him, took another look at him, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, he's got a totally different mindset and everything. So it's not that there's a 50-50 mix when you take, you know, from your mother and your father. Sometimes you take, you know, 75% from your father and 25% from your mom. Sometimes there are different combinations. Sometimes this is why you have children and you say, oh, you know, this, she looks just like her mother, or she looks just like her father, or whatever. There are different, combinations. I mean, I remember Lauren Southern, she did her DNA test, and she thought she had Scandinavian blood, but when she did the DNA test, it came back and she said she had Spanish blood. I remember, what was her name? Wife with a Purpose. She did a similar thing. You know, she, I can't remember the combination, but she thought she was one Irish or whatever, and she was something else, you know. So it's, you don't necessarily get, you know, a 50-50 mix between your mum and your dad. You can get different strange combinations and things happen. And you can get like this man I met. You can get a guy who's got white skin, but then you look at his bone structure and he's black, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. It's kind of weird.
It's the features, isn't it? It's the features that you see, the facial features. Yeah. They might have white coloured skin, but then they'll have a flat nose, and they'll have jowls or lines going down to the side of their mouth, and their jaw will be a little bit further forward, and their forehead might be a little bit smaller. I mean, the Negroes have these smaller brains. If you look at the skull, they've got a much smaller space in the skull to actually fit the brain. So if you have a Negro skull on a white body, it looks really out of place. I mean, I've mentioned this before on podcasts. The lady who plays Sharon on EastEnders, Letitia Dean, she's obviously a mulatto, but she's got white skin, and they put her in a blonde wig, and yet she's got this gorilla head on this big fat wide set neck, and when she's stood next to a Negro on the soap opera, they've got exactly the same body and a similar looking face, and yet she looks white, and she's got white hair. When I was a kid, I can always remember thinking, what is it about that girl? What is it about her? She just looks so strange. She looks like a gorilla, and yet she's white. What is it with her neck and her shoulders and her head? And when you look at her, she's got this tiny little space in her skull for the brain to go. There's just something about them that looks weird and strange and off, and it's nearly always the proportions. How can anyone do that to their children? It's tragic. But that doesn't mean that we should be accepting them into white nationalism. I heard the other day that there were some of these non-white types that were turning up at some of the book clubs, some of the Daily Stormer book clubs, which wasn't very... Well, I found it a little bit upsetting to hear, but this seems to be going on everywhere. I mean, I don't want to be singling out the book clubs there, but you hear about them turning up for TRS things. I know that we've had some in Britain that have now been stopped from going to the forum or any of our other nationalist meetings. But
we have a Bangladeshi white nationalist, don't we?
Yeah, well, you have to keep these people out. Yeah, you have to. I mean, if you want to engender a sense of brotherhood among the people that you're with, then it has to be of one race only. You can't have mixed race people in there. That's not brotherhood. That's broken brotherhood. That's coming from a broken home. You can't feel at ease with these people. And there's something about them that is always different. That you'll be having a conversation with them, and they just won't get what you're talking about, or they just won't find the same things funny. There's always something. Sometimes you can't put your finger on it. There's always something about them which is slightly off. And you know, before I was a nationalist, I just used to just ignore that, forget about that. Everybody's different. Once you learn about these things, though, you realise that that's because they're not white. And because they're not white, you don't have that bond with them that you have with every other white person. I mean, it's the same when you see non-white children. The noise they make, it's not a nice noise. But when you hear white children, it's always a nice noise. You know, white children playing together, it's a lovely noise to hear. Kids playing. Right. When you hear a group of young Negroes screeching and squalling and wailing, it's a hideous noise. Absolutely hideous noise. You get a gang of them together. Seen some of these videos in America where they've all descended on a supermarket or descended on a garage to rob the place, and the noise they make when there's a load of them together, you can't work out anything that they're saying. It's just this jungle noise.
And yet, rat music.
You hear kids in a playground, white kids. Oh, it's a pleasant sound. It's a pleasant sound. There just isn't that connection there with people that aren't white, and we shouldn't try to pretend that there is a connection, and we shouldn't invite them in to join white nationalism. Definitely.
No, it is a very contentious and divisive point. I mean, I'm not, I know you're very much a not one drop kind of guy. I don't know. I mean, you got so many Greeks in America, so many Italians. They're kind of like, you know, they're not really, I don't know, Italian people, are they white, white? They're not really white. I mean, they've got certain drops of blood in them. So sometimes it can be very difficult to know where to draw the line, I guess. Yeah, definitely we have to keep an eye on that, isn't it? Keep an eye on it. I mean, I've said this example before. I know there's a lady down the road who's, I thought for a long time she was a Pakistani, and I didn't like her, you know, because she's a Pakistani. And then I found out she's Greek. And then all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, well, maybe she's not so bad, you know, but the facial structure is basically, you know, pretty kind of similar to a Pakistani or, you know, that kind of. So I don't know. I'm not.
Well, I think I have the way to deal with it. The way to deal with it is to look at people. If they seem to be white, if they look white, if they act white, if you haven't got some nagging feeling that they're not white, and then for all intents and purposes, they are white. I mean, Harold Covington has I think he's put it best when he described the ways to do this. But if, when you first meet them, if something isn't quite right, then they probably aren't white. On the first impression, you should pay attention to the first impression. You should pay attention to how they look, how they sound, how they behave. And the other thing is do they have any known non-white ancestry? Because if they know that they had a Negro in the family 3 or 4 generations back, then no, they're not white. Because a lot of the time they will know. And the final one is if they have been DNA tested. Now, there is a margin of error with these DNA tests. So if they've been told that they are white, there's no known non-white ancestry in their family, and yet then they have a DNA test, and the DNA test says, oh, 3% possible red Indian, then there's a 5% margin of error. So if they look white, they act white, their family have told them that they are white and there is no red Indian ancestry, and yet the DNA test comes back saying 3% possible red Indian, then I think you have to say, well, that's probably a margin of error. Because I know some people get really worried. They will have a DNA test and they'll say, oh no, 1% this or 2% that. And there is that room for margin of error. Of course, if you have been told that you've got some non-white ancestry and it comes back and says 3% red Indian, then yeah, you're not white and you shouldn't be trying to get involved with white nationalism or the alt-right. If the alt-right is about preserving the white race, then no, we don't, you know, we don't want the enemy.
I think there is a spectrum, and I think it seems to be increasingly evident that the alt-right is more of a moderate form of white nationalism, and I'm personally quite happy for it to kind of do its job. It's kind of so kind of like a means to the end, in the same way that you know you have a spectrum. You have people like Tucker Carlson, who's doing a good job on Fox News. He's not a white nationalist.
He's really funny. I do like him. I just started watching him recently. That face he has, he's got such a deadpan face, isn't he? You don't know if he's laughing taking it seriously. Yeah, he's really good. Let's see more of
him. He is good. I mean, Ann Coulter, she's good. She's not a white nationalist. Trump, you know, she's... So you have a spectrum. So, yeah, you know, you've got your Tara McCarthy's of this world who, like, you look at her face and you think, well, she looks a bit, you know, Indian or Greek or something. I'm not going to get all bent out of shape worrying about it. We've got bigger problems than that. There is a spectrum which goes all the way from Donald Trump down to Tara McCarthy and then down to people like you and Harold Covington, who are just the pure Puritans, kind of like at the bottom. And
at the bottom.
I don't mean at the bottom, like on the...
No, that's fine.
On the ground.
We hold everyone else up. We hold everyone else up. That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, as long as things are moving in the right direction, you know, people like Tara McCarthy, she's kind of doing a good job, and, you know, I'm not going to get all bent out of shape over it. In the future, when we've got rid of the Muslims and the Jews, we can create a system of eugenics, you know, where people marry the right people and are encouraged to marry the right people. Then we can deal with, you know, Tara McCarthy and whoever the hell else, you know, these half-breed people. We can deal with the Greeks and the Italians and what have you. I'm just not. Yeah. But you are right. We should definitely. I mean, we should definitely keep the non-whites out. I mean, I've seen, especially in the on the internet, a lot of Indians jumping on the Keck bandwagon. It seems, and a lot of Indians, with the Pepe and with Trump and with Make America, it's like they think they're white people, and it's like, mate, you're not, you know. So I think the whole Kekistan thing has been totally co-opted by Indians, to be honest with you. I mean, I've seen quite a couple of YouTube channels with an Indian girl, and she's got a Kekistan flag, and she's like, Kek, praise Kek, and the white race, and da da da. And it's like, you're not white, you're an Indian, you know. Give it a break.
I think, Paul is politically incorrect, isn't it? But I'm not so sure that they insist on people being white. I mean, that's not to knock Paul. I mean, Paul does what Paul does. But I think that...
the Kekistan thing.
Yeah. That is part of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've experienced this myself because living in India for many years, you see that the Indians, they have a certain... jealousy, envy for the white man. It's kind of really crooked, actually, and it really started to annoy me after a while. But it's, on the one hand, they have this pride of being Hindu and born in India and et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, they all want to move to America and get themselves a white wife. And they just, I think it's basically because there is a ancestral memory there that they used to be the same color of skin as us, and they've lost it. And I don't think the Africans, on the other hand, they don't have this, because I don't think the Africans ever were white. They were just, you know, whatever they were, living in the jungle in Africa somewhere. But the Indians, they used to look the same as the Europeans do, and now, you know, thousands of years later, because of various reasons, Islam is one reason, Buddhism would be another reason. They've lost the color of their skin, or they've gained a color of skin. And, so I think there is, some kind of deep regret. You hear about the same thing in Iran. I've never been to Iran, but that guy that works with Richard Spencer, that Iranian white nationalist guy, whatever his name is, he was talking about it. How, like, you know, if you have a family and the kid's born with lighter skin or blue eyes or blonde hair or something, then everybody's really happy about it, you know. Because the Iranians, again, Iran comes from the word Aryan. They used to be white skinned like us. So, yeah, especially with the Indians, I've noticed a great envy when it comes to white people. And they don't really know how to deal with it, I think.
I don't think it's just them. I mean, you say that the Indians feel a sense of kinship with whites because they know that they were once white. I mean, these statistics say mixed race and East Asian are more likely to date outside their race. So they are likely that they do want to breed with whites. 90% of Negroes want to breed with whites, even though the majority of them, or some of them at least, that wouldn't have any white heritage. Because don't forget, most of the Negroes that we see in Europe and America are mixed race already. They already have a certain amount of white blood in them. Otherwise, they would be, you know, jet black. They'd be black boot polish colouring, and they would look like they'd just come out from the jungle. And the type that you very rarely see being put forward on television as an actor or a pop star or anything like that. So you've got these blacks that are jet black that want to date with whites. The only people that aren't in these statistics are the Aborigines. And I think what this shows us is that non-whites do want to breed with whites. And whatever reason they tell themselves, or whatever instinct it is that tells them that, whether it's Indians that feel a kinship or Negroes that know that it's going to raise their IQ and make them look more attractive. Because don't forget, all these skin whitening products that the Negroes have, they do everything they can to lighten their skin and wear wigs so that it looks like they have straight hair. They do everything they can to try and try and look white. And what the end result of this is that all these non-whites have a desire to breed with whites, which is dangerous because it's basically destroying the white bloodline. So all the non-white races, when you look at it at that level, they are all a threat to us when they're within our living space, because there's always that chance that they will act on their instincts, whether that's a Negro that's going to rape a white woman, or whether that's an Indian or an Asian that's going to try and date a white woman, or a white man for that matter. And that's going to destroy our bloodline. So this is why I see them as a threat, basically, regardless of whether they're saying, well, we support white nationalism. Yeah, well, you could say you support white nationalism, but the statistics show that you wish to date outside your race, particularly if it's a mixed race person. And I think these ones that do try to get involved with white nationalism, that's what they're thinking. They're thinking, well, I wish I was white. I'm nearly white. If I hang around with white nationalists and they get into power, maybe they'll find me a white person that I can breed with and I can turn myself white again. And I think because of the National Socialist race theory from 70 years back, where they said that people could whiten themselves by breeding with whites, these non-whites, they see that and they think, well, there's my chance. I want to join the National Socialist people because they will help me to whiten myself. But it's not possible. It's not possible. And the whole point of white nationalism is to preserve the white race. And doing that means that you're not preserving the white race. It means you're corrupting the white race. You're adulterating the blood. And that's where the word adulterate comes from. To adulterate the blood, to adulterate one substance with another, to adulterate one race with another. I don't want to wish to be making out that all the other races are our enemies, but at the fundamental level, then yes, they are a threat to us. And that's what these statistics show. And instead of looking at them in that way, our treacherous, traitorous TV companies are trying to say that we should be like that as well, and that we are racist for not wanting to breed with these other races. I think it's an example of where you can see the same statistics and point to a completely different conclusion. I get that a lot, Subha. I look at things in science and I think, well, that tells me a completely different conclusion to one that the scientists are saying. Yeah, this is one of those instances, I think. These statistics could be used by us to say, well, look, whites are objectively beautiful and the other races want to breed with us. It's not that we're racist and don't want to breed with them. It's that we wish to keep our beauty. You know, we don't want the beauty of the Aryan woman to perish from the earth. And that's the only way that it could perish from the earth is through interbreeding with them. So that's why they have to be kept out from white nationalist meetings and kept out from book clubs. It's a slippery slope, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, it is a slippery slope. And, it's something you really got to keep your eyes on. But, yeah, I think it's also partly a breeding strategy as well, because they know that they can't compete with, you know, people of a higher IQ. And so they want to drag them down to their level, because they know that ultimately if we survive, they're going to end up enslaved again. This is why you see in Haiti, in the revolution, first of all, they killed all the whites. And after they slaughtered all the whites, they slaughtered all the half-castes as well. Because the half-castes, obviously, you know, they got a bit of brains, right? So they killed all them as well. They dragged the whole thing all the way down to the bottom. And that will ultimately be the future of humanity unless we win this fight. But I think there is there is a knowledge there. They have a knowledge. I mean, there's a historical knowledge. If we go back, well, it's a 100-year anniversary of the Russian Revolution this year, isn't it? So you go back 100 and 110 years, and white people, we had the entire planet in the palm of our hand. We had the British Empire, we had the French Empire. We had the whole world in our grip. We had dominated and conquered absolutely everything. And they know, and the other nations know this, the political leaders of other nations know this, they know that we have the power to do this again. I mean, we still are in a strange way, we're funnily enough, we're almost there. I mean, America has about 100 military bases dotted all around the world. It's just that now we have this this Jewish sickness which is crippling us. But yeah, we're definitely at war with and in competition with the other races of the world, and they must be. I'm sure that the Prime Minister of India must be thinking, well, you know, maybe it's good if Europe goes down because then we won't get conquered by them again, right? I'm sure that the politicians of various other nations are thinking the same thing. They remember being conquered by us. So they're not going to help us. It's up to us. And I think ultimately that, in fact, I think it's pretty obvious that if we do win this fight, or when we win this fight, we are again going to be the masters of this world, because if we get rid of the Jews and we get rid of all the non-whites in our countries, we're not going to start another brother war after that. I mean, imagine the massive emotional catharsis that all the white people of Europe and North America and Canada and Australia that we're going to go through. We're not going to get involved in another brother war. What we're going to do is we're going to go out and reconquer the planet again, bring it under our heel. I mean, we still, from an economic perspective, it's been a while since I looked at GDPs, but I think gross GDP of America is something like 17 trillion a year. And for Europe, it's something similar. So we already have, you know, gross domestic product for the world is 60 trillion. So we already have almost 2/3 of the world's wealth in our hands. So all we really have to do is get rid of this sickness and we will rule again. So, we're in direct competition and conflict with the other nations and the other nations of this world. And, I think it's good actually to have this idea of not just a small-minded idea of I want to save my country, or can't we just have our own ethnostate? It's not fair. No, I want to conquer the world. I've always wanted to conquer the world ever since I was a small child.
It's all there for the taking, isn't it? It's all there for the taking. We just have to wake up and take it back.
I remember my teachers asking me at school, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to conquer the world. You know, so... But the Muslims have this attitude, and it drives them on.
And it's healthy competition, isn't it? It's healthy competition, is what it is. I mean, these non-whites, they know that they can't be like us. They know that they can't make themselves white. So what they want to do is make us like them. They want to make us brown like them. Yeah. That's what's at the root of it, isn't it? Yeah. Then we'll have the equality. And then you've got the idiot whites who go along with that and think, oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? We'll have equality. We'll all be brown, just like the Kudinova-Kalergi plan for Europe. And it's basically just going along
we'll
with the
instinct
of the non-whites.
We'll have equality. We'll break down to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah. Bring us down to their level. But as you say, we could, you know, it's all still there. The apparatus is all still there. We have the resources. We could take it all back. We could judge the earth in the way that we were always intended to. I mean, who would you rather have running your country? Somebody white or somebody non-white? Who would you rather have judging you in court? Somebody white or non-white? And all the non-whites would agree that they would rather have white people doing it. It's only the traitors to their own people that would say that they would rather be in charge. And that's why you have all this corruption in these non-white countries, in Africa, yeah, and in India. If it was white people, you wouldn't have the corruption and the people would be better off. And if we don't take it, if we don't take back sovereignty, we will lose it and they'll take it. I mean, you look at the Christian perception of it, the white man was given dominion over the earth, subdue the earth, have dominion.
Yeah.
And we gave that up. We said, no, we're equality. We're no better than anybody else. And as soon as you say we're no better than the Negro is going to despise you because he knows that you're far better than him. And you're not using that, and you're not being thankful for that. You're not appreciating the fact that you are so much better than a Negro. You're saying, oh, I'm just the same as him. How insulting. How insulting to be so ungrateful to God that you think you're the same as these other races when we were created as the pinnacle of creation.
I also want to just interject and say it is very, very important that we keep the dream alive as well, especially considering the amount of psychological pressure that us white nationalists have to go through because we know what's going on. And, you know, it's kind of like, sometimes you just feel like screaming, don't you? But it's very, very important to visualize this thing. I know it sounds a bit hippie-ish, but it's true. Visualization and visualizing your victory is a great source of strength and inspiration. And I'm always thinking, I mean, Jez Turner's going to give me a mansion and I'm going to spend, you know, my elder years, I'm going to be skiing in the Alps and drinking coffee and little Paris cafes and, I don't know, hiking through the outback perhaps or through the Rocky Mountains in my white ethno state. It's going to be fantastic.
Resting your pint pot on a Negro's forehead?
No, thanks. Skip that. Thank you.
All right. Anyway, we've gone past the end of the podcast now, but enjoying that. And we wanted to end on a positive note. White world supremacy. It's all waiting there for us to take it back. Subal, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Please don't forget that we do have a Bitcoin wallet. And please don't forget that Morgoth from Morgoth's Review also has Bitcoin, I believe, and PayPal. So please donate to him as well. We'll be back next Monday with more SS Britannia for you. So until then, we hope you all have a wonderful week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.